I hope that everybody enjoyed their Easter weekend. Welcome into the Lake Show, News Talk 830 WCCO. Full show tonight. Twins back in action tomorrow, Wednesday. Full show on Thursday. Happy to have you along for the ride. The secretary with the General of United Nations, Antonio Guterres, described Pope Francis as, quote, a messenger of hope, humility, and humanity. It's been talked about a lot today. Pope Francis passing away at the age of 88. And I think that in this exact moment, as everybody is talking about Pope Francis and remembering him, I think that this is a time in our world, and specifically in this country, where we need to actually reflect upon how we're living our lives right now. And I think that what we are doing now in this exact moment will be studied many years from now on how we navigate the current times of working with each other, helping each other, and just showing people the dignity that they deserve. Because right now, it's tough to sit here and say that we're extending that to everybody out there. And it's a troubling place to be in. And we are so divided amongst political lines and affiliations that at the end of the day, there should not be any questions about treating people with common decency. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. There are a lot of people that are, when they look at, we'll just say, for example, the situation with Mr. Garcia, who's been deported to El Salvador, that they're just steadfast saying, you know what? No, he ain't coming back. Forget about due process. He ain't coming back. Forget about the fact that it has not been proven that he is a member of any gang. That's just where they stand. And there are some that say, look, this is a scary place that we're in with going about it in this way. And so, you know, when you look at things, I hope that we move forward and we understand that phrase that we were told many, many years ago when we were kids, treat people how you want to be treated. And that is something, in my opinion, that we have to live by. It's not just something that they told you when you were a little kid and they sent you off to elementary school and they wanted you to keep your hands to yourself and not hit another young kid. It's actually the way that we should probably think about actually living. And I know that there's so many people in the world, and we're always going to be people that will do amazing things but also make mistakes. But they tell you, learn from your mistakes. Treating people with the dignity, with the respect that they deserve, because they are human, I think is something that I will always think about with regards to Pope Francis. And when they say he was a messenger of hope, humility, and humanity, I think that we should remember that.
They call it the golden rule. Do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. And the amount of do as I say, not as I do is astonishing nowadays, because you've got people that are telling you you should act a certain way, but yet their actions are completely opposite of what we're being told. So I think, you know, in today's day and age, like, I feel like we need people that are going to be consistent with the messaging, that are going to be, if you're going to tell me something, I want you to I want you to live out. I want to be able to believe you, because if you're going to tell me to do something, but you are doing the opposite of it, then what motivation is there for me to trust in you that you want me to do the right thing when you won't even do it yourself?
But I'm not even saying that. That is scapegoating somebody else. This has nothing to do with certain political leaders. This has everything to do with you and you and you and I looking in the mirror and addressing ourselves. How dare Henry Lake be somebody that would look to the current president or any politician or any person and say, well, I'm not going to do right because they're not doing right. How dare me be the person that would try to live my life out in that way? I'm not going to scapegoat anyone. I am saying that it's for me. It is for you.
Mm-hmm.
It is for everybody to look in the mirror and address yourself. This is not about anyone else.
But the problem
is... Hold on. Because if we do that, then we're better. If we do that, it starts with each individual person. It doesn't start with the political party. It doesn't start with the neighborhood group that you're signed up to. It doesn't have anything to do with it. It has everything to do with if you go down the hall and you go look in that mirror here at the station, then we'll all be better. It starts with yourself.
But sometimes people can't be honest with themselves. And I think that's a big problem. Because what people think they are, the individual that we try to portray is not necessarily our true selves. You know what I mean?
But who would you say gets assigned the blame for that?
Oh, it's
thank you.
Well, that's the thing though. There are people that will not be honest with themselves because there is the accountability that they don't want to have. There is the negativity that they don't want to bring on. It's about the projection. You know, whether you're projecting positive or negatively. And I think that's also something that there are people that will not take a hard, honest look at themselves and admit their faults. And along with that, you've got, you know, abilities that sometimes people are they downplay. So you can downplay the positives and the negatives. But I think we are in a society right now, Henry, where I just don't think a lot of people want to be honest with themselves with when they look in the mirror.
651-461-9226. I can take your reaction on the text line as well as a phone call or two as we talk about the passing of Pope Francis at the age of 88. Also, Gutierrez had some other comments about Pope Francis' Easter message. We get to that next year on The Lake Show. All right, the talking text line is wide open, 651-461-9226. From the 651, Henry, thanks again for your wise words. I look forward to listening to you every night. You're the best. I appreciate that text. I don't view myself as, like, super, like, wise. I just view myself as a person that just wants to do the right thing and talk about helping out others. And I guess I would say to everybody that's out there listening, because there are some people that are beyond upset at things that are happening in the world,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And I understand the frustration, okay? You feel like there's a lot going on, there's a lot of uncertainty, people are concerned about, you know, just a lot of different things, which at this particular time, you feel like you're hopeless and you don't have any control. I guess I would say the one thing about how I'm trying to navigate the current state of affairs, specifically with a new administration and all that stuff, whatever, is understanding that no one's going to come in particular save you. You have to be focused on bettering yourself and your situation for your family. You have to look at it through that way. To think that the next person's always going to look out for your best interest, I just don't – do I think there are a lot of good people out there? Yes. Do I think there are some politicians out there that actually want to help us get into a better place? Yes. Are there amazing organizations that do great work? Yes. And when you think about people that want to send messages of hope amidst despair for a lot of different people, yes, I think that Pope Francis was one of those messengers of hope. But at the end of the day, with that hope that's being told to you, you actually got to believe in it.
You know, one thing that I've learned from you over the years that we've worked together is the, you know, is being real and authentic, right? Whether you like it, whether you don't, there. And I heard this with Jason and Dan earlier today, where it's like people right now, we are at a point where people are living in two different realities. And we may get to the point where those two realities are never going to intersect. And that becomes a big problem with society, more so than we already are, because we are on two completely divergent paths. But when you're sitting here, Henry, and you're talking about things in real life terms and going out there in a day to day, it's not a matter, you know, they say you got to walk the walk and talk the talk. It's just trying to give advice and positivity on how to live your life in the most constructive way and not depending on everybody to fix the issues for you. They're, you know, it's hard when you look at things and you don't have any motivation. And it's hard to try and look at the bright side when sometimes things are not, you know, all rainbows and puppies and kittens. But at the end of the day, there is always going to be a certain amount of accountability that each and every one of us needs to take, and the amount of energy that we need to put forth to make ourselves better, to make our communities better. And I think that's just kind of that reality that you're talking about and you know, the messages that we heard from Pope Francis over the years.
Antonio Guterres, he continued on, the Secretary General of the United Nations, and stated that he urged the world to invest in what he referred to as the weapons of peace to help the most vulnerable, to fight hunger, to advance development. With regards to Pope Francis and how he lived his life and what he stood for, quote, our divided and discordant world will be a much better place if you follow his example of unity and mutual understanding in our own actions. And let me mention this in a separate statement from the UN Refugee Agency. They expressed sadness at the passing of the Pope, but listen to this, calling him, quote, a tireless advocate for the rights and dignity of refugees, migrants, and the forcibly displaced worldwide. And I think that one of the things that to me is extremely offensive is this notion and this thought of immigrants just being bad people, just being the worst of the worst. And that really does bother me. It really does. And I'm not going to sit here and say that every single person that has ever come to this country, illegally or legally, is the best of the best. We understand that. Heck, we have our own issues with people that are born here in the city. Mm-hmm. But my point is this, is that I think it's really, really bad to have that type of view of other people that you literally don't know their story and cannot understand them. And that bothers me big time.
It's easier for us to demonize people that are not similar to us. It's convenient to use those that are different as a scapegoat and to stereotype them and just paint everybody with a broad brush. Because, I mean, this is also something that we learn when we're kids. You've got good and bad in every race, every religion, every ethnicity, every corner of the world has good people and bad people. And to sit here and say that, you know, everybody of this proportionality is bad and they're evil, when that is not the case. But the problem is breaking that mentality. And it's a very, when you get a lot of people that are thinking like that, it's very hard to have that resistance and to have that resistance really mean anything when you've just got this intense energy behind it.
And it sounds like just kind of at the end, and I didn't really realize this about Pope Francis, but he had for a long time suffered from chronic lung disease because a part of one of his lungs was removed as a young man. So, I mean, this is someone who has lived a good life with all of the health challenges that he's endured.
Amazing.
And the last public appearance on Easter?
Fitting.
When you heard the news this morning about that, didn't it make you feel a certain way when you knew that was
it did. It's almost like he was holding, because I mean we heard what, at the end of February, like was it the end of, I think it was the end of February, where they had talked about letting him die peacefully. And then he made this recovery to get through Easter. And then later that night, after that service, it's just a really random set of coincidences. That is it so random? I mean, it kind of makes you wonder.
651-461-9226. Coming up next, we'll take a break, take a look at the local weather, and then we'll talk Timberwolves basketball. Chris Hine from the Minnesota Star Tribune will join us from L.A., and he'll do that next. I wasn't lying when I picked the Timberwolves in 6. Take that, Shannon Sharp. And I know it's only one game, but man, the optimism that I have for the squad. Let's talk about it with Chris Hine from the Minnesota Star Tribune, covers the Minnesota Timberwolves. He joins us now on the John Chooser Call Banker Hotline. Chris, how you been?
I'm good, Henry. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome, man. I'm doing awesome. What a spectacular, you know, game to watch there for game one. I watched it on replay because I didn't see it live because I was at the Kendrick Lamar SZA concert. But, man, oh, man, that was fun to watch and see them play as well as they did on Saturday. What was the most surprising thing about that performance in your mind about what they did on Saturday night?
I wrote about it for my newsletter this week, but I would say probably the transition. I think the fact they got out and ran as well as they did, as often as they did, the kind of looks they were generating, I think it took the Lakers by surprise. Now, this is a team that was like bottom five in fast break points throughout the season, but they really made a concerted effort to change ends of the floor, you know, make Luka, LeBron have to get back on defense instead of taking their time. And that's where Jaden McDaniels thrives sometimes in transition. I think that's how he was able to get going. So just their ability to get out and run was one of the keys, the big keys to the game, and I think really took the Lakers by surprise. And I don't think you would have expected that coming into the game.
Yeah. Well, the Lakers, you know, they played well in that first quarter. They even led at the end of the first quarter, 28-21. What do you think was the pivotal moment or the pivotal thing that kind of shifted there in that second quarter?
Yeah, it was that start of the second quarter. I think with the collapsing of the defense, Jaden hit his first turnaround fadeaway jumper. And I kind of said to myself when I was sitting there, when he hit that shot from about 15 feet, I was like, oh, Jaden's hitting that shot, so he might be in for a good night. And sure enough, you know, he pretty much hit almost every shot he took after that. And Naz Reid came in off the bench. And it was a kind of an up and down end of the season for Naz. But then he came in and he started flame throwing as well from deep. And it's like, okay, Jaden and Naz are locked in here for these guys tonight. And that was the recipe, right? The Lakers are going to make Ant have to give it up. They're going to make him try to figure out the defense. And the best thing for Ant to do is attract all that attention and try to create open looks for his teammates. And they got to knock him down when they get him. And that was the formula in game one. Jaden and Naz took full advantage. And, you know, that's why Ant goes 8-for-22, has 22 points, but he has 9 assists. And that's how the Wolves, that's the formula for a 22-point victory in game one.
Yeah, dominating victory for the Minnesota Timberwolves there in game one. What did you make? Because I'm a little bit, you know, myself, I'm kind of like, he played okay, but he didn't play all that great. Well, what is your take on what Julius Randle did in game one?
Yeah, I 7 turnovers, obviously a concern. And, you know, I think he's going to address that. He, you know, the physicality, you know, he got the technical there when he and Jared Vanderbilt got into it. I think it was in the third quarter, or maybe early fourth quarter. But I think this is kind of what I think about the Wolves when I think about their depth, right? There are some nights where it's not really a Julius Randle game, right?
Yep.
And then Jaden and Naz Reid step up and have big nights. Then there are other nights where maybe Jaden and Naz Reid don't have it, but those are the nights that might be a Julius Randle game, or it might be a Dante DiVincenzo game, or Nikhil hits 4 or 5 threes. You know, that's what this depth affords you. When one guy doesn't quite have it going on a given night, you have all these other weapons that you could deploy, and guys that are capable of having big nights to help compensate for when somebody else doesn't have a particularly great night. And there are times when Julius, like that Memphis game, you know, when he was just absolutely rolling and he could take over a game. So, you know, I think a little bit of a feeling out for him in game one, but I still think he did enough in terms of generating open looks himself. And I don't think it was like a liability or anything like that. I think he's going to adjust after game one, see how they're defending him, see where maybe he can best fit in, and figure that out for game two.
Talking to beat writer covering the Minnesota Timberwolves, Chris Hine for the Minnesota Star Tribune here on the Lake Show. News Talk 830 WCCO. When I look at the Lakers, one of the reasons why, Chris, I've selected the Wolves to move past the Lakers is because I never fully bought into the national hype and the narrative of the Lakers being a team that was constructed to make a deep run. And the reason why, and this series is just getting started, it's not over. The Lakers could clearly, they could easily, I don't say easily, they could win this series. But I think that they are a flawed roster. And the reason why I believe that is because most people will look and say, oh man, they hoodwinked the Dallas Mavericks. They were able to get Luka, and Luka's a phenomenal player. And for the long term, I think it's going to work out for them. But in the short term, Anthony Davis, a future Hall of Famer, phenomenal on both ends of the court. I look at the Lakers, and I just don't respect their front court.
Yeah, and I think, not that the Wolves would publicly say this, but I think they saw an area that they could attack. And Jaden McDaniels had a good point after the game the other night. When the Lakers have Jackson Hayes out of the game, Jaden McDaniels is like the tallest player on the court sometimes. So that's a license for him to just attack, and he can crash the offensive glass. He can get rebounds. I think he had 9 rebounds the other night. He put back both of the misses that he had. He was 11 for 13, but each of those 2 misses, he put them back in. And, yeah, I think the Wolves see that, and that's a license to attack the rim. So the Lakers chose the path of trying to crowd the paint with all those bodies, and the Wolves were able to knock down the open looks, and they were getting some very wide open looks. So do the Lakers counter by staying at home more on the Wolves shooters? Do they try to make Anthony Edwards, who has struggled at times, to finish at the rim? His percentages aren't, you know, they're a little off this year finishing at the rim. Do they try to just make him finish at the rim more when he drives it and not collapse the defense as much? Maybe that's one of the adjustments they try to do in game two. You know, where do they deploy LeBron? How much does Jackson Hayes play? Because right now, I think there is a, you know, just overall a personnel advantage for the Wolves. But, you know, at the end of the day, can Luka Doncic and LeBron James kind of enter superhero mode? And what do the Wolves do to counter that? They're obviously capable of doing it. Can they do it throughout a whole series? And how would the Wolves answer if that does happen?
Yeah, and you're 100% correct. You know, like when I think about the Lakers, I think of LeBron and I think of Luka. The last month or so, people were kind of throwing Austin Reeves' name in there like he's like there's some sort of big three. The Lakers don't have a big three, correct?
I mean, they kind of do. I think Austin Reeves is a very good player.
I think he's good, but I don't think he's worthy of a guy being kind of pictured as part of a big three.
Well, he's definitely not on the same level as Luka and LeBron, or like when I think of like a big three, quote unquote, I think of like somebody who's like an all-star caliber player, right?
Yes.
I don't think Austin Reeves is quite there. He's a very good player, but I think the Wolves look at Austin Reeves and say, we gotta make sure he doesn't get going. Like that's number one on the, or not number one on the priority list, but it's very high on the priority list. And that's why you saw them kind of hiding Mike Conley on other matchups, because I think the Lakers might have thought that Austin Reeves versus Mike Conley was a matchup that they were going to try to hunt and take advantage of. But the Wolves, you know, Ant kind of took that matchup. Ant can be a very good on-ball defender at times when he wants to be. And I think, you know, in the playoffs, you take that, you ratchet that defense up a little bit, and you can take an Austin Reeves out of the game. The Wolves have done that before to players, you know, like, you know, Devin Booker, they've taken out of playoff games before. Jamal Murray, they've taken out of playoff games before. So they are accustomed to, you know, dealing with very talented players and taking them completely out of games. And so I think that's kind of the formula with Austin Reeves is let's make sure he doesn't get going and put it all on Luka, put it all on LeBron to have to, you know, score. It's kind of similar to what they do with Nikola Jokic. These guys don't want to score, have to score 50 points to win games, right? LeBron is a playmaker. Luka is a playmaker. But if you take away part of their superpowers, you make them a little more one-dimensional, and maybe you wear them out a little bit in the process.
You know, Chris, you know, I know that Jay McDaniels had a remarkable game, one of the best games, I believe, in his career. He was awesome. Anthony Edwards could have shot the ball better. We know he missed some time with the cramp and all that stuff, whatever. They won by 22 points, but there's a but here. And the but is they're not likely to shoot 50% from three again with taking that many three-point shots. So where do they need to improve in game number two tomorrow?
It is finishing at the rim a little bit. And I'll counter by saying this. The Wolves did shoot a very high three-point percentage during the course of the season. And I'm a big believer that, you know, the quality of looks also determines how well you shoot from three-point range. And the quality of looks that they were getting was fantastic. So I don't – not to say that 50% is repeatable, but is 40% repeatable? You know, and does Anthony Edwards get to the rim a little bit more? Does Julius Randle get going a little bit more? If the Lakers aren't going to commit as many bodies to the paint, that probably leaves a little bit of room for Rudy Gobert in the lob game a little bit too. That didn't really happen in game one. So those are the adjustments. If the Lakers have to sell out to try to collapse or stay home on shooters, I think it's going to open up a little bit more in the paint, and that's where, you know, like Randle, Gobert, and Ant, I think, can get going a little bit.
All right, last thing for you, Kristen, we'll let you go. Any thoughts on this series that you had going in? Has any of those thoughts changed with regards to how well this team played on game one?
Not really. I kind of thought that, you know, the Wolves, from a personnel standpoint, were just a deeper team, and that showed in game one. But let's see how the Lakers counter. They're obviously going to come out with a lot of energy. It's LeBron James. It's Luka Doncic. It's a lot of playoff experience. It's a lot of winning basketball on the other side of the court with those two guys. So, you know, not ready to crown anybody yet based off of a 22-point win, because I think they're going to come back with some answers here. But certainly, I think from the Wolves' perspective, you wondered if they could reach this level. Were they ready to face the Lakers? Would they be able to tap into their depth in this series and at least make it a series and not, you know, Lakers in four or five like you might hear out there in the national media? And the answer was a resounding yes. So I think at the very least, we're in for a deep series here. It all just depends on how the Lakers respond in game two.
Hey, Chris, always a pleasure to have you on the show, my man. Enjoy the rest of the series.
Thanks, Henry. Appreciate it.
All right, take care. That's Chris Hine. Check out his fine work for the Minnesota Star Tribune. All right, 651-461-9226. A couple of my thoughts on this series. We do that next. I picked the Wolves because I think the Wolves are a better team. I didn't pick them because I'm trying to be some sort of homer, because I just, who's going to do that? When I'm playing Prize Picks and I want to, you know, look at Anthony Edwards' stats or Luka Doncic or whatever, right? I look at the way that these rosters are constructed, and I think that the Lakers are top-heavy. They have a Hall of Famer in LeBron James. They have one of the best players in the world in Luka Doncic. On the opposite side, we've got Anthony Edwards. We got one of the best defensive players of all time in Rudy Gobert. We've got Jay McDaniels, who, man, you never know what you're really going to get from him. Naz Reid, actually the last month of the season, hadn't played that great. I think that we're just much deeper. I know they got Austin Reeves. We got guys to combat that. And so when you look at the Lakers, they have honestly two guys that you're not going to stop. LeBron's going to get his. Luka's going to get his. On our side of it, Anthony Edwards, he's going to get his. But you got to factor in the Julius Randles of the world, the Mike Conleys of the world. We're just deeper.
I really like the comment that Chris just made about, you know, Nikola Jokic, because he had that 60-point, you know, triple-double in that insane loss by Denver. And, you know, it's kind of like the Wolves. Yeah, these guys are going to get theirs, but shut down the Austin Reeves, shut down the Dalton Connector, the Rui Hachimuras, or whoever it is that is going to you know, be that guy. Because after the Lakers traded Anthony Davis to the Mavs, they had a deal for Mark Williams from Charlotte for Dalton Connect. Yeah. He was supposed to be their big. I mean, the Lakers were not supposed to.
They knew they were flawed.
They knew they were flawed. And they thought they were going to get him, well, you know, rescinded, you know, because, you know, some sort of physical situation. But I think there's something to that, that limit what those guys get, shut down everybody else, because, you know, especially LeBron, what, being 39 years old, he's a freak of nature. But eventually, I mean, when you're playing 44, 45 minutes a game like that, that's going to add up.
You know, the funny thing is that I just think that the narrative nationally were that the Lakers were back. And I never bought into that. I never bought into the Lakers are back.
Because of the Luka splash?
Because of what they lost. You gained a lot in Luka, but you lost a lot when you traded away Anthony Davis. I think that people are seriously, they are acting as though Anthony Davis is some sort of scrub.
Well, and
I'm like, what?
Well, I think, you know, it's recency bias with the injuries and guy can't stay healthy. So it's like, well, you know, you give away Anthony Davis to get a guy in Luka Doncic that the ceiling long-term is going to be much higher than what they feel they can have with Anthony Davis. But I think, too, like after that Luka move, after Luka settled in, the Lakers did have that spike where I think they went from like the, you know, sixth or fifth up to third, where they just kind of settled into the third spot. But over the last month, I mean, if you look at them, like their offensive and defensive rating worse than the Wolves, the record worse than the Wolves. Now, granted, the Wolves had the easiest schedule based on winning percentage. But I think, though, when you've got Luka and you've got LeBron, naturally, everybody's going to naturally gravitate to those two guys. You know, it's two versus, you know, nine, right? I kind of feel like that's it. It's Luka and LeBron versus the world. And right now, nobody's taking the world. Everybody's taking Luka and LeBron.
Yeah, and I never looked at it that way. I think that, see, this is the funny thing, and this is how it works. The narrative for this entire series has changed dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
A team gets beat down by 22 points.
At home.
And they get dominated. Now the narrative is, oh, well, yeah, maybe the Ant-Man and the Wolves are just way too much. It's funny how that works in the course of 48 hours.
If the Wolves don't win tomorrow night, what changes in your mind? Does anything change in terms of my mind?
Because I always had them getting a split anyway in the first two games.
Does the national chatter around the Wolves Lakers series change if the Lakers win tomorrow night? Because I feel like, you know, okay.
I think the national pundits still believe that the Lakers are probably the better team.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like right now, it's like, oh man, the Wolves, you know, maybe they're something you really have to deal with. I just feel like if the Lakers come out tomorrow night and take game two, then it's like, well, yeah, the Wolves were lucky to get one, and here we go. The Lakers are, you know, Lakers are on their way to advancing to the second round.
Yeah, I think that will be premature to roll with that.
I have that weird feeling it's going to happen.
I'm saying it'd be premature to have that take based on the fact that, well, we played two games and none of them were in Minnesota.
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, that goes back to playoff basketball 101, right? I mean, everybody say, split on the road, win at home. You got to take one out of two. Because if you lose game one and you take game two, guess what? You're coming in with momentum on, you know, game three, what, on Friday night, which to me seems insane that you get 2 days off between games two and game three. I mean, it takes an incredible amount of time to get from Los Angeles to Minnesota. But be that as it may, I feel like game two tomorrow, I don't want to say pivotal, But you,
no, if the Wolves win tomorrow, the series,
it's done.
My opinion, is going to be over.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. I mean, I think you can. I think you can put the hammer in the nail tomorrow night if the Wolves win. But if they don't, then I think all of a sudden people, you know, everybody that are, you know, praising the Wolves, it's going to be, the pendulum's going to swing back over to Luke and LeBron versus the world.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's right, but we. I mean, we've seen this before.
Yeah, I mean, people change takes, and you have every right to change your take if you believe that you're seeing something different now. I don't see anything different. Not after one game. That's just me. So I can't speak for everybody else. All right, coming up next year at the top of the hour, the talk about tariffs is going to go away. But will anyone benefit from the tariffs? One particular industry could, and we get to that next.